information is free.
The law.
There is hope.
When ignorance is converted into knowledge.
Tonight we care.
Appear to border
and it shows.
The law.
The country.
You will remember nothing you have seen or heard here.
Whether he went on with the diary, or whether he did not cooperate, it made no difference. The thought police would get him just the same.
Disasters can strike in the blink of an eye, anytime, anywhere, my friends. Welcome to the 139th episode of MediaMonarchy.com. It's September 4th, 2009. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show for all the news, politics, conspiracies and cover-ups, pandemics, PSAs, the Seed Vault and GM Foods, Power Grab, cyborgs and mystery laptops, Malthusian messiahs, mercenaries and lewd behavior, provocateurs and peacekeepers, banksters, biometrics, body snatchers and bombs, copycats, mouse meets spider, Bush reporter, suppressed news, 9/11 updates, and mystery aircraft. All that and so much more is here. It's September 4th, 2009, episode 139 of MediaMonarchy.com. going back 10 years from their album Summer Teeth. That's Wilco. Maybe all we need is just a shot in the arm. And they're working on that shot. They're prepping that shot. And I'm working on a shot to tell you all about the news, politics, conspiracies, and cover-ups that are going down. And we're going to do it right here. It's September 4th, 2009. This is the 139th episode of Media Monarchy. My name's James M. Pilato, your host and webmaster of the site and show, MediaMonarchy.com. Thanks, as always, to the home station, the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, live every Friday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Time, simulcast live on 92.3 in Casper, Wyoming, thanks to zeropointradio.com, the worldwide home of free speech, revereradio.net, blasting it out 1 p.m. on the East Coast right now, and again, huge thanks to Free Radio Olympia, Boulder Free Radio, Ground Zero Radio in Canton, Georgia, Cascadia Public Radio, and again, a big thanks to our latest affiliate, BerkeleyLiberationRadio.net, 104.1 FM in Berkeley, California. And that's awesome. You, of course, know you can make contact through FaceSpace, TwitterTube, Yahoo, Gmail, Skype, Instant Messenger, iTunes, RadioForAll.net, and Archive.org. A quick note, I realized I accidentally uploaded last week's episode 138 twice to RadioForAll.net, so if you saw that and noticed, there was no difference between the two. It was just Radio for All acts a little funny sometimes. The other big thing I want to mention is a big thanks to my man Steven, out in Norman, Oklahoma, the home of the Flaming Lips, for his donation to MediaMonarchy.com, working on setting up an easy way, a PayPal, a chip-in, a donate button, something. Working on it. I'm working on it. And I appreciate the praise and the help and the comments and the donations. Because that's what it's all about. That's what we're trying to do here. We're trying to spread the word about what's really going down. Now, really, never before in history, unprecedented, the amount of information and the ability for communication. So we can communicate this info, and then we can all make better decisions. So much to go over this week. I know I always say this, but it'll be a miracle if we can cram it all into one mere little two-hour episode. Glancing at Google News on this September 4th morning, NATO pledges Afghan strike probe. NATO's promised full investigation into an airstrike on two fuel tankers that killed at least 90 people in Afghanistan's northern Kunduz province. We also note, of course, that unemployment has reached a 26-year high. New numbers out. A little bit more on that a little bit later. And, of course, we've got primetime Obama. Always loves to give a primetime speech. We've got the congressional speech coming up next week, as well as some hotly contested speech to high school kids. More on all of that in the shell game coming up. But we started the show with a shot in the arm. And that's how we're going to dive in to this first post on MediaMonarchy.com. In a flu pandemic, what can the government do to you? This report is from ABC News, interestingly enough, where they note what the flu lets the feds do to you. What might life be like during the kind of major swine flu pandemic predicted by the White House to hit the U.S. this fall? The worst-case scenarios percolate on the edges of thought. Bans on public gatherings, restricting the movement of afflicted individuals, and compelled vaccinations. Conspiracy theorists go farther, suggesting that the World Health Organization is behind a secret plan to inoculate Americans at gunpoint with immune system depleting vaccines to depopulate the globe. The CDC's report, released Monday, may well create some level of hysteria. It says that 1.8 million Americans could become seriously ill this fall, and as many as 90,000 could die. As to the fears about a World Health Organization conspiracy, one of the spokes folks adds, quote, "The WHO staff is smaller than the New York City Health Department, so its ability to impose worldwide martial law would be a miracle." Missing the point completely. And again, that's what we try and do. We don't necessarily say that the mainstream media lies to you. They sometimes, of course, lie by omission. And we've noted how fascinating it is that Hollywood films that are supposed to be make-believe end up spilling more truth than the news, which is supposed to be true. So they basically say, conspiracy theorists say all this stuff, but the report may well lead to one thinking that. Because there are plans for compelled vaccinations and quarantines. And saying that the WHO World Health Organization would impose worldwide martial law isn't the way it would happen. It's all compartmentalized. So, we see it again and again. Straw man arguments, easy to knock down. But thanks to our good friends like Bilderberger, Kathleen Sebelius, and the Department of Health and Human Services, you can download their whole Pandemic Influenza Implementation Plan Briefing book. I've also got links in there. You can read the massive archive of stories now going back almost 6 months on MediaMonarchy.com about the swine flu. And that's ABC News telling you what the government can do to you in the case of a vaunted national emergency. The question I've been positing for a while now is, just as we saw in the wake of 9/11, they had a plan on the shelf, ready to roll. They just needed the event. We're wondering, well, of course we're not wondering, we know. Lawrence Lessig has talked about it. It came from the mouth of Richard Clark. We know that there is an iCyber Patriot Act waiting for a catalyzing event. And we know that it's all on paper what they can do in the event of a pandemic. Pandemics, of course, that are generally created in labs and then accidentally released during a drill. Or even, admittedly, they release viruses just so they can kind of lick their finger and test the wind and see which way the flu is going to go next fall. We wouldn't need their vaccines if they didn't create the garbage in the first place. That's all I'm saying. Our next post eases right into more on BioWars and EnviroHealth, pandemics, PSAs, and the Pacific Garbage Patch. An interesting couple of articles from our own Portland Tribune. It's a weekly newspaper, and every time I grab it, I always kind of smack myself and go, God, I need to look at this much more often. It's so much better than the other weekly free newspapers in the city that are more concerned with sex, drugs, and rock and roll. Not that there's anything wrong with those things at all, but are we morally ready for another great pandemic? That was the headline that was on last week's Portland Tribune. To see that headline staring out at you around the city in the newspaper boxes, I thought was quite amazing, and in one way took a lot of balls. And it's also what made me grab the paper. Writer Peter Korn KORN, wrote a couple of articles in this. The other one, Spanish flu epidemic hit Portland hard. I tried to get in touch with Peter Korn, sent him an email. Guess I should have done the follow-up phone call. Asked him about an interview to talk about these articles. If he looked at the email, if he hit the link to the website, he may have seen the website and said, oh, you're a conspiracy nut. But hopefully not, and perhaps we could still get in touch with him. Are we morally ready for another great pandemic? HolisticHelper.com goes into the 1918 flu being helped along, if not causing, or rather caused by, vaccines. The vaccine caused Spanish flu. There's a whole book by Dr. Eleonora McBean all about the Spanish flu of 1918 and vaccines. It's massive. And it's all up on whale.to. KnowTheCause.com goes into how you can survive the swine flu without getting the shot. I know that sounds how you can survive as if you don't get the shot, you won't survive if you don't do these things. What it goes into, essentially, things that you know, or things that you probably should know, such as getting adequate amounts of rest. And unfortunately, this is at the top of the list. It says irregular sleeping patterns, inadequate sleep, all cause stress in your body and can adversely affect your immune system. I'm going to have trouble with that. Wash your hands, maintain a healthy diet, regular exercise, vitamin D, vitamin C. You know, eat right, exercise. But as it gets a little uglier, Massachusetts Senate passes draconian flu pandemic bill. This by way of Kurt Nemo. And this comes from Senate Bill 2028. The corporate media is ignoring S-2028, the flu pandemic bill that was unanimously passed by the Massachusetts Senate. The draconian bill was covered extensively by the alternative press, but not a word from the Times or the Post. What's important is that 2028 will be used as a template for legislation in other states. The bill imposes a virtual police state and martial law on Massachusetts at the behest of the governor in the event of a flu pandemic this fall. It gives the state health commissioner, law enforcement, and medical personnel wide authority to mobilize forces, vaccinate the population, enter private property with no warrants, and even quarantine people against their will in violation of something called the Constitution. The bill allows the state to enter property without a search warrant, destroy the property without a court order. It would force in-state health care providers to assist in the performance of vaccination. We have documents, quarantine documents from out of Florida as well as Iowa. There were PDFs hosted on the CDC website. Thanks to Cryptogon.com, he just posted them up, unformatted, nice and easy to read. And there it is. It's all there, even with the blanks for people to fill it out. ZeroHedge.com also goes more into these CDC quarantine documents. And again, you can get them any number of ways. Download the PDFs. They're up on Scribd. Maine governor, so we're going from Massachusetts, and then we hit Florida and Iowa. Now we're going up to Maine, and their governor, Baldacci, he's proclaiming a civil emergency due to H1N1. Dateline, Augusta, Maine. Governor John Baldacci on Tuesday declared a statewide civil emergency because of the H1N1 influenza virus, paving the way for mass immunization of Maine school children and other residents. French government plans mass swine flu vaccination program, this time from Paul Joseph Watson. Another document. Shocking internal document outlining the French government's plan to impose a mass swine flu vaccination program on the entire population, which would be focused around regional vaccination centers and would be carried out by H1N1 injection teams, completely bypassing medical establishments and general practitioners. Links to the AP as well as, again, a PDF. We have the documents. It's written down. And it won't have to be, as we hit in the previous article, that the World Health Organization will swoop down in a massive, coordinated martial law conspiracy. They won't have to do that. Because Elmo's already told your kids all about it.
It's time to practice staying healthy on Sesame Street.
That's right. Now, in order to stay healthy, always wash your hands.
Come on, practice washing your hands with Elmo. Wash, 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 wash.
Keep washing, and you'll stay happy and healthy on Sesame Street.
Now, of course, that's a good message. But what's the next one going to look like? What's the one after that going to sound like? Troops to receive H1N1 flu vaccines. This going straight to army.mil from the American Forces Press Service. All military personnel will be vaccinated against the H1N1 flu virus, and the vaccine will be available to all military family members who want it, a DOD health affairs official said September 1st. From the Seattle Times, question, swine flu to hit 50% of us? But from the Washington Times, Obama says that the H1N1 vaccine is, quote-unquote, strongly recommended. He made the public plea in a Rose Garden press conference after meeting with administration officials preparing for the reemergence of the new H1N1 flu as students return to schools and workers end their summer vacations. The question is, will Sasha and Malia get the shots? Pregnant women express fears over swine flu vaccine. That's from The Guardian. CDC warns neurologists to watch for nerve disease after shots. We've mentioned this before. Oh, so watch out. The CDC has followed in the footsteps of British health authorities by warning neurologists to look out for the cases of the nerve disease Guillain-Barré syndrome, GBS, and I may not be pronouncing that correct, GB syndrome. Doctors in Britain were advised last month, and we hit that story, by the government to carefully track cases of the disease and report each one to the Health Protection Agency. More on that from the Daily Mail and the Los Angeles Times. So watch out. Other sources are dialing it back as others are dialing it up. H1N1 unlikely to mutate into superbug. That is from Reuters. Why won't healthcare workers take the swine flu vaccine? That's from the Post Chronicle, postchronicle.com. And I believe, again, we noted last week that most of the doctors and nurses aren't going to do it. The other one from across the pond, dialing it back from The Guardian, swine flu won't be as dangerous as we thought, UK official says. And lastly, on the BioWars note, not directly related to swine flu, but of course it's all in the big, ugly disease industry stew, U.S. drug maker Pfizer has agreed to pay $2.3 billion in the largest healthcare fraud settlement in the history of the Department of Justice. It comes after the firm was found to have illegally promoted four drugs for uses which had not been approved by medical regulators. A subsidiary of the firm pleaded guilty to misbranding drugs with the intent to defraud or mislead. U.S. officials said Pfizer would have to enter a corporate integrity agreement. A corporate integrity agreement. And we know there, we just read it, that a subsidiary of the firm pleaded guilty. So whether it's somebody torturing or shoving people in a chamber or whatever, it's the little, oh, they did it. I was just following orders. The flip side on this update into EnviroHealth, and starting it off frighteningly enough by way of Bloomberg, international paper treads Monsanto's path to Frankenforests. International paper, the world's largest pulp and paper maker, plans to remake commercial forests in the same way Monsanto revolutionized farms with genetically modified crops. International paper's ArborGen joint venture with MedWestvaco and New Zealand's Rubicon, that's funny, is seeking permission from the U.S. Department of Ag to sell the first genetically engineered forest trees outside of China. The Australian eucalyptus trees are designed to survive freezes in the U.S. South. More clamoring for geoengineering the atmosphere. It's coming from the Council on Foreign Relations. It comes from John P. Holdren. And it comes from DigitalJournal.com asking if man-made volcanoes can slow down climate change. MercuryNews.com goes over the Pacific Garbage Patch Expedition finds plastic everywhere. Plastic islands at sea. The lack of mercury reporting is fishy. This from whowhatwhy.com. And this goes into some of the recent reporting that did come from the New York Times, as well as, I believe, well, New York Times or the Reuters piece, and a few reposts, and just quick mention about how, quote, mercury found in every fish tested, scientists say. And it just gets a little quick mention. Health insurance up by double digits in Oregon. That's from the Oregonian. Study says that Hanford construction workers were at risk for certain cancers. This from the Tri-City Herald. An interesting question from McClatchy. Do TV medical shows provoke higher health costs? That's a little too long to go into, but interesting for the media monarchy. Lastly, on this BioWars EnviroHealth note is a strange one. I believe I've mentioned before that I subscribe to just a few, you know, news of the weird, odd things. But of course, they always fit in to all the other subheadings we have, whether it's murder and mayhem or, in this case, EnviroHealth. FDA test says animal was in man's soda can. This Dateline, Ormond Beach, Florida. An FDA test shows that either a frog or a toad was in a Florida man's soda can. The Food and Drug Administration test confirmed that the remains of an animal were in Fred Denegri's can of Diet Pepsi. Denegri popped the can open July 23rd as he was grilling dinner outdoors in Ormond Beach. A Pepsi spokesman said the company is aware of the FDA testing and stands by its manufacturing process. The can was traced back to a plant in Orlando, which runs about 1,250 cans a minute, 1,250 cans a minute on the production line. The spokesman said the speed of the production lines and the rigor of its quality control make it virtually impossible for a frog or toad to get into a can. Denegri said he is certain the animal was in the can before he opened it. If that story has any legs, if you will, watch for copycats. There's a syringe in my Pepsi can. But now we're going to jump over to foodworldorder.com, one of the news sites under the media monarchy kingdom. UN Chief Moon, that's Ban Ki-moon, and Wikipedia says that his religious views are private, but we know that he's a Moonie. UN Chief Moon visits the Doomsday Seed Vault in the Arctic. This from the AFP. UN Chief Ban Ki-moon visited Wednesday a vault carved into the Arctic permafrost filled with samples of the world's most important seeds in case, you know, food crops are wiped out by catastrophe. The world faces many daunting challenges today, one of the greatest of which is how to feed a growing population in the context of climate change, a bundled-up Bond told reporters after he toured the site in Svalbard, just outside of Norway, 745 miles from the North Pole. The seeds stored here in Svalbard will help us do just that. Sustainable food production may not begin in this cold Arctic environment, but it does begin by conserving crop diversity. Aimed at safeguarding biodiversity in the face of climate change, wars, and other natural and man-made disasters, the seed bank has the capacity to hold up to 4.5 million batches of seeds, or twice the number of crop varieties believed to exist in the world today. More on that from theherald.co.uk, and just read about the Doomsday Seed Vault in Svalbard up on Wikipedia. At least they mentioned man-made disasters. Because in this case, the man-made disaster is that food terror corporations like Monsanto are helping destroy the food. So they're making sure they put stuff away for them while they slowly bioweapon us all. To further illustrate that point, the next posting on foodworldorder.com, this from the Daily Mail out of the UK, supermarkets in secret talks to introduce GM foods to the shelves. The big supermarkets have held secret talks to pave the way for the introduction of controversial GM crops onto their shelves, industry sources said. The stores banned GM ingredients more than 10 years ago in response to public anxiety about their impact on human health and the environment. But a source indicated that all the major supermarkets were involved in the discussions except one called Waitrose. W-A-I-T-R-O-S-E. Waitrose.com. Multinational giants have been involved in a wide-ranging campaign over the last year to suggest GM crops could be the solution to third world hunger. That notion was rejected by a UN study last year. But the UK Gov has ordered the Food Standards Agency to carry out a year-long campaign to win support for GM foods. Earlier this year, Sir Terry Leahy, boss of Tesco, T-E-S-C-O, Britain's biggest supermarket, said supermarkets may have made the decision to reject GM products too hastily. Quote, "It may have been a failure of us all to stand by the science." Secret talks to get in secret ingredients to your food. The third and final posting from foodworldorder.com comes again by way of the news of the weird on click2houston.com by way of internet broadcasting. Pot may protect brain from booze. Brain scans show less damage. Marijuana may protect the brain from some of the damage caused by binge drinking, according to a new study. Researchers at the University of California, San Diego performed brain scans on 16 to 19-year-olds in three groups: binge drinkers who also smoke pot, and those with very little drug or drink experience. Binge drinkers showed damage in their white matter, but those who drink and smoke showed more damage than the control group in only 3 of 8 areas of the brain. In 7 of the areas, their brains were in better shape than the binge drinkers. Researchers said in a news release from the Marijuana Project that the result was unexpected. They said, dude. They said it could be that marijuana somehow stops alcohol from damaging brain cells. This study was published online by the journal Neurotoxicology and Teratology. You can check out the quick abstract, but you have to pay for the full article. More from the Marijuana Policy Project, MPP.org, as well as just more write-ups on the new study from the Atlanta Journal-Constitution. Pot may protect brain from booze. And on that note, we jump over to the other sister site, cyberspacewar.com. Our first posting is an ugly list of headlines. I'm trying to think of a clever name for when I just post up News Purge headlines on cyberspace war, and for the moment, I've just settled on DEF CON. So this was posted up yesterday, September 3rd, so it's DEF CON 9-3, Power Grab, Spyware, Surveillance, and Cyborgs. More on the expanding cybersecurity powers for the president, provoking a debate. We are going to get a little more into this with its own posting, but we'll hit Federal Computer Week quickly. As they note, existing laws already give the president broad discretion on how to respond to cyber attacks, despite language in a Senate bill that proposes giving the president specific powers during such events. Senate Bill 773. The president already has emergency powers to take any action necessary to act in a national emergency, said Jeffrey Adicott, director for the Center of Terrorism Law at St. Mary's University School of Law. This includes cyberspace. The president has that power under the National Security Strategy. The most recent National Security Strategy was published in 2006. Power grab. White House seeks to capture and archive citizens' comments on all of its social net sites. Facebook, YouTube, MySpace. This from CNSnews.com. Anyone who posts comments on the White House's Facebook, MySpace, YouTube, and Twitter pages will have their statements captured and permanently archived by the federal government, according to a plan that the White House is now seeking a contractor to carry out. Change, baby. Can you feel it? Newswithviews.com goes further into Obama's latest cyberspace power grab. In the Electronic Frontier Foundation Cybersecurity Act returns with a fresh coat of paint. CanadaFreePress.com goes into what's really wrong with the cybersecurity bill. We have an article. It's one of those I can't trace back to its origin, and it seems to be placed and posted in a million places. So the link I just hit is to newsfactor.com, and it didn't even load. World War 3.0, 10 critical trends for cybersecurity. And this actually, okay, I got a link that worked. Here we go. A quick 10. Technology increasingly dominates both the economy and society. Point 2. Advanced communications technologies are changing the way we work and live. Number 3. The global economy is growing more integrated. Number 4. Research and development play a growing role in the world economy. Number 5. The pace of technological change accelerates with each new generation of discoveries and applications. Number 6. The United States is ceding its scientific and technical leadership to other countries. Number 7, technology is creating a knowledge-dependent global society. Number 8, militant Islam continues to spread and gain power. Number 9, international exposure includes a growing risk of terrorist attack. And number 10, the world's population will grow to 9.2 billion by the year 2050. I was with you there till number 8 when you threw in the thing about them dirty Arabs want to kill us all. DHS needs to plug some cybersecurity holes. A new audit finds, again from Federal Computer Week, new browser, red flags, disputed facts on the web. This from thespec.com. By way of the Canadian press, developers of new web browsing software that flags questionable claims or outright lies on the web hope it will become a valuable tool to deal with misinformation that litters the internet. But observers say Dispute Finder, an experimental browser extension developed by Intel, and the many websites that already aim to debunk online rumors and falsehoods face an enormous task. It isn't as easy as simply telling someone they're wrong. By way of threat level, and frighteningly enough, the code for Skype spyware released to thwart surveillance. A Swiss programmer who crafted malware for intercepting and recording voiceover IP phones has posted the source code online to draw attention to vulnerabilities in programs such as Skype and make it harder for law enforcement to surreptitiously use the malware for surveillance. So actually, that's not scary. That's a good thing. The other part that is scary and sad, by way of the AFP, eBay to sell Skype for $1.9 billion. We'll just see what happens, and I wonder who it'll be. Oh, well, what's this next headline? Google evangelist sees web brain implant link. The man regarded as one of the founding fathers of the internet is in the country, and he says the future of the web is in our bodies and in outer space. Vint Cerf CERF, Vice President and Chief Internet Evangelist of tech giant Google, foresees the introduction of internet capability to existing neural interface technology such as cochlear implants. I think that's in your ear. Allowing, as an example, web radio played directly from computer to brain. Gmail was knocked offline for a good chunk of the day a few days ago. That's from the AP. Your cyborg eye will talk to you. This is from readwriteweb.com, and this goes along with the web brain interface. The cyborg eye. There's interesting photos. The need for custom parts, physical constraints, user safety, LEDs, you know. Transhumanism, baby. The last note on this DEF CON cyberspace war posting by way of independent.co.uk. Move over, Michelle. Watch your backs, Carla and Sarah. There's a new kid on the First Lady block, and she looks like she's upstaging the lot of you. Mayuki Hatoyama, wife of Japan's Prime Minister-elect Yukio Hatoyama, is a lifestyle guru, a macrobiotics enthusiast, an author of cookery books, a retired actress, a divorcee, a fearless clothes horse for garments of her own creation, including a skirt made from Hawaiian coffee sacks. But there is more, much more. She's traveled to the planet Venus, and she was once abducted by aliens. The 62-year-old also knew Tom Cruise in a former incarnation when he was Japanese, and is now looking forward to making a Hollywood movie with him. I have been abducted by aliens, says the new First Lady of Japan. We're going to get a little more into the geopolitics and the landslide election recently in Japan. But first, more from cyberspacewar.com. State governor saying no thanks to those mystery laptops. This from the Associated Press, and this goes right to my home state. Even during tight budgetary times, a growing handful of state governors are proving too wary to accept laptop computers that have shown up at their offices this month unsolicited. The FBI was investigating after the governor's offices in West Virginia, Vermont, Wyoming, and Washington State received between 3 and 5 laptops, but none had ordered any of them. They immediately raised a red flag, said Matt Turner, spokesman for the West Virginia governor, Joe Manchin. No one said, hey, we got a free gift. The laptops were made by Hewlett-Packard or came from its Compaq brand. The world's leading PC maker said it told law enforcement that it intercepted and turned around similar deliveries ordered for 6 additional states. Officials in Washington and Wyoming said those computers had been purchased with credit cards whose account numbers did not match any issued by those states. West Virginia State Police Sergeant Mike T. Bayless declined to comment on how the laptops shipped there may have been paid for. The state police and the FBI are working jointly to get to the bottom of why these computers were sent to West Virginia, Bayless said Thursday. Agent J. Bartholomew, the FBI's supervisory senior resident agent in Charleston, declined to comment Thursday. Now, they mention FBI agent J. Bartholomew. When I tried to find a listing for that guy in West Virginia, I only found a listing for J. Bartholomew in Charleston, South Carolina. It's possible it's the same guy, and it's possible they brought him up. I don't know. I don't know what's on them, but I'm assuming we didn't receive these as a gesture of goodwill, said Kyle Schaefer, West Virginia's chief technology officer. We take very strong measures to protect ourselves from the outside world. That's a funny little statement that could blanket all of West Virginia. As a result, none of the governor's offices report turning on any of the machines. They instead either shipped them back or handed them over to law enforcement. We jump down to the bottom paragraph of this article. West Virginia has become particularly sensitive to potential scamola. Earlier this year, someone ran up a $475,000 charge on State Licensing Board's phone bill after it mistakenly posted its conference call account codes online. The state's auditor was also tricked into rerouting nearly $2 million meant for vendors in a bank account set up by what investigators say is a Kenyan-based fraud ring. Wah, wah. mystery laptops. I would like to think we could track down where the hell this came from. Our third and final posting coming from cyberspacewar.com. Bill would give president emergency control of internet. We've hit it before. We're going to hit it again. Again from Tom Burkhart and his great blog, Anti-Fascist Calling. You got to hand it to congressional Democrats. Mendacious grifters whose national security agenda is virtually indistinguishable from Bushist Republicans when it comes to rearranging proverbial deck chairs on the Titanic, the party of change is second to none in the all-terrorism, all-the-time department. While promising to restore the, quote, rule of law, and to, quote, unquote, protect civil liberties while keeping America safe, in practice, congressional Democrats, like well-coiffed Republican clones across the aisle, are crafting legislation that would do Dick Cheney proud. The Cybersecurity Act of 2009, S-773. Link for you to read it from opencongress.org. As the Cybersecurity Act of 2009 wins its way through Congress, civil liberties advocates are decrying provisions that would hand the president unlimited power to disconnect private sector computers from the internet. CNET reported August 28th that the latest iteration of the bill, quote, would allow the president to declare a cybersecurity emergency relating to non-governmental computer networks and do what's necessary to respond to the threat, end quote. Drafted by Senators Jay Rockefeller, Democrat from West Virginia, and Olympia Snowe, Republican from Maine, best friends forever of the National Security Agency and the telecom industry, they were some of the key enablers of Bush-era warrantless wiretapping and privacy-killing data mining programs that continue under Obama. Links in there for you to read more about Olympia Snowe and John D. Rockefeller IV, also known as Jay. More from CNET. And on and on. So now we've mentioned the Messiah, so let's do it. Obamasiah updates. Malthus, health scare, schools, and speeches. First, a great new article from one of the Collins brothers. Philip D. Collins. I first heard Phil and Paul Collins when they would make regular appearances on the late, lamentedly lost Visigoth Beyond the Grassy Knoll podcast. He has a new article called When Malthusians Become Messiahs, and he goes all the way through eco-science, the population bomb, and all the great works by Paul and Ann Ehrlich, and of course, John P. Holdren. You know, some of Obama's science advisors, advising him on geoengineering the atmosphere, compulsory abortions, forced vaccinations, you know, stuff like that. They wrote it down in a book called Eco-Science in 1977. When Malthusians Become Messiahs. CBSNews.com has an interesting piece by way of The Nation, interestingly enough, dealing with the secret government. And it goes into, of course, the fact that we need to investigate and prosecute the previous puppet and his cronies. But the current puppet and his cronies, which ain't that different from the previous puppet and his cronies, or the previous one to that, we don't want to get mired in the past. We want to look forward. An interesting op-ed from the Washington Times, false reports about guns. CBS and NBC, or rather MSNBC, peddle phony stories about arms, race, and violence. Many media outlets have misfired about guns. Countless newspapers and TV networks from CBS to MSNBC have misreported that conservative protesters are threatening Obama with guns at public events. It hasn't happened. In Portsmouth, New Hampshire, a man carrying a gun, William Kostrick, joined in an August 11th healthcare protest. This was blocks away and hours before Obama's town hall meeting in that city. Mr. Kostrick was given permission to be on church property where the protest occurred and was not at the place the president visited. What most of the coverage left out was that Mr. Kostrick didn't carry his gun only for the protest. He carries a gun legally with him at all times. I believe I just saw a news article the other day about a guy being exonerated for shooting and killing a pit bull attacking him. It was self-defense, and his gun was legal. But as we see the class war and the race war being ratcheted up, it's so... I guess I shouldn't be surprised. We've been talking about it for the last year, and I told you exactly what would happen when the Democrats came back in is that we'd shift back into the McVeighs and the militias. Homegrown errorism, as I like to call it. I just didn't think it would happen so quickly, and I didn't think it would become so apparent. But it's happening. All around. Raw story. Gun toters pastor now prays Obama dies of brain cancer. Pastor Stephen Anderson of Arizona's Faithful Word Baptist Church, spiritual advisor to the man who carried an assault rifle outside a recent Phoenix healthcare rally with the president, believes that God wants people to hate Obama. He's even praying that Obama dies of brain cancer like Ted Kennedy. We also have writer, sex columnist Dan Savage, recently appearing on Controlled Left, Keith Olbermann, pointing out, perhaps correctly, that folks like Michelle Bachmann are unconsciously trying to get Obama killed. That whole video is there for you. No time to play the clip. More on this in just a little bit because it extrapolates out further, but, you know, I'll just mention that according to the latest Zogby poll, Obama's approval rating is plummeting now to 42%. Russian professor Igor Panarin, who we hit several months ago, is now back saying that the collapse of America could begin in 2 months. Just in time for Christmas. Rombozo and the Dems fishing for a fall comeback. Washington Post has an interesting story about Rahm Emanuel taking a little vacation, spending time fishing. They call it fishing for a comeback. And of course, as the wheels seem to be coming off, the agenda isn't working. But remember, they told all the Obamatons, just stay with us. It's not going to look good, but stay with us. They're waiting for their catalyzing catastrophic event. It's interesting that they use the fish angle for Rahm Emanuel because we know that he's mailed dead fish to opponents like a gangster. Except Rahm Emanuel isn't one of the Italian gangsters, he's an Israeli gangster. But the end result's the same. School kids to get assignment from Obama. This is a fun story to watch develop, but we'll hit the first one from the Washington Times. In the midst of a rancorous healthcare debate and a sustained period of declining poll numbers, Obama's seeking help from an unexpected constituency, America's school children. And they better pay attention to his request. They may get graded on the assignment. The White House announced Wednesday that the president plans to tape a presidential address to public school children around the country to air at noon on Tuesday. Along with advanced word of the speech, the U.S. Department of Education last week distributed a menu of classroom activities to teachers that aims to turn the speech into one of Mr. Obama's teachable moments. And it went on. White House... Oh no, I've already gotten the flip-flop. It was, you know, when I mentioned I get my feeds from Google Reader and I just see the headlines and they're always listed newest to oldest. It was funny to see this story back-to-back. School kids get assignment from Obama. And then the next one was White House withdraws call for students to help Obama. Obama's plan to inspire the nation's school children with a video address next week erupted in a controversy Wednesday, forcing the White House to pull out its eraser and rewrite a government recommendation that teachers nationwide assign students a paper on how to help the president. So he realizes his polls are going down with the people who can actually vote for him, so he's getting them a little younger. Kind of like the tobacco companies, if you like that analogy. There is a video of more Obama indoctrination going on in schools. We've seen a lot of that in just some of the regional news and some of these national service groups that start to sprout up. And again, it's the youth. Get the youth. Get the Obama youth for the civilian National Security Force. President's speech at Virginia High School stirs controversy. We're now back to the Washington Post. Parents who want their children to hear President Obama's back-to-school message Tuesday might have to keep them home. School systems from the Washington suburbs to Houston are balking at airing the speech to all of their students. Loudoun County and Charles County have no plans to show it at all. Logistics rather than politics are driving many of the decisions, especially in Northern Virginia, where Tuesday is the first day of school. But then the other speech comes the next day, on Wednesday, my friends, where Obama will deliver a health care address straight to the Congress critters. President Barack Obama will deliver a major address to Congress next Wednesday, confronting critics of his health scare overhaul and trying to buck up supporters on an issue that has been slipping from his control under withering Republican-led attacks. That's very flowery prose from the Associated Press. The speech will underscore an acceleration of Obama's direct involvement in proposals to overhaul the nation's health care system. I don't have time to go any further into the health scare, but I will mention that I've noticed all the statuses on StatEye on Facebook, people all changing their status in unison to say some phrase that you're all supposed to copy and paste. It's all these useless platitudes and statements that come from the white, liberal, guilty folks that I know and love and am surrounded by, friends and family alike, where I live, where I work, all of it. Such as when we went to a certain sterile computer store the other day, and they said, "Oh, do you want us to just email your receipt and save a tree?" My girlfriend, God love her, immediately took the opportunity and said, "You know, that's not really true. Paper forests are grown for paper. They're not chopping down the rainforest so I can get a receipt from you." And it was awkward, but it was good. Obama to address Congress on health care reform. More from the Washington Post, more from the Washington Times and the LA Times. Interestingly enough, again, from our favorite left opposition, fake progressive, Microsoft, National Broadcasting Corporation, General Electric, Rachel Maddow, Keith Olbermann. One of her guests pointed out that this speech is an act of desperation. We've got a woman from Lubbock, Texas, suing Obama because of his name. Is this... Oh, well, I hit the link to read about it, but... Huh. Perhaps I messed up my links, or perhaps they messed up their links. Lubbock woman sues Obama over his name, Barry Satoro. S-O-E-T-O-R-O. Barry Satoro. Make sure you get that story. The last thing we'll note from the Wall Street Journal on Obamasaya updates... Obama has been urged to rally support for war. The White House is facing mounting pressure from lawmakers to work harder to rally flagging public support for the war in Afghanistan. With casualties rising, the administration is struggling to persuade voters that the war can be won or is worth the human and financial costs. Afghanistan is President Barack Obama's top foreign policy priority, but recent polls show that a majority of voters oppose the war for the first time since the conflict began 8 years ago. I wouldn't be surprised that a lot of that switching in the polling is just from one party to the next. The Dems love it and aren't saying shit about it. No protests, really, to speak of. Because he's their guy now. They're puppets in power. So now we're probably seeing the fake conservatives now saying they're against the Afghanistan war. And calling Obama out for his bullshit on the campaign. Although, in a way... As, again, we pointed out many, many times, he didn't exactly lie. He was just the blank slate that you foolishly put all of your hopes and desires on to fix everything for you. The appeal to authority. The daddy figure. But it was slick and cool, baby. (laughs) We're never going to get it through all this wonderful, horrible news if I don't keep on target and stop making little funny, punny asides. But the one aside I will make right now is that we're already into hour number two of episode 139 of MediaMonarchy.com. My name is James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, coming to you September 4th, 2009 from the Portland Radio Authority, praradio.org, zeropointradio.com, revereradio.net, frolympia.org, boulderfreeradio.com, berkeleyliberationradio.net, and cascadiapublicradio.org. Thank you all so much. So, speaking of rallying up some support for war, and again, how do you do that? You have big events. It's on to the war whores, mercenaries, Afghani surge, and lewd behavior. First, as if you didn't know this and as if you don't get it yet, State Department extends Blackwater Dine Corps contracts in Iraq. The mercenary group, formerly known as Blackwater, which was banned from Iraq by its government after a Baghdad massacre which killed 17 civilians, will see its contract extended in the country by the U.S. State Department. Thanks, Shillery. We, of course, always note the flashback. Dine Corps, Halliburton, sex slave scandal won't go away. Dine Corps and lots of other private military contractors, they do more than grease brown civilians in foreign lands for top dollar. They also run arms and drugs and humans. Fact. And yet we continue to do business with them. And our new president and his new Secretary of State extends the contracts for Blackwater and Dine Corps. The Blackwater Prince has been accused in U.S. District Court of intent to kill. This is from the Washington Post. The founder of Blackwater USA deliberately caused the deaths of innocent civilians in a series of shootings in Iraq. Attorneys for Iraqis suing the security contractor told a federal judge last Friday. We just mentioned this before, but let's mention it again, this time from McClatchy. Poll says most Americans oppose more troops for Afghanistan. Big surprise. U.S.-Afghan strategy not working. Big surprise. That's from the BBC. But what do polls and what do other think tanks say? That it's not working. We don't want to do it. We don't want to surge. We don't want this war. We don't want to kill more civilians. Do they care? Do you think they care for one moment? They don't. U.S. to boost combat force in Afghanistan. This from the Los Angeles Times. Support units will be replaced by up to 14,000, quote-unquote, get this, trigger pullers. They're swapping people out. Support units will be replaced by up to 14,000 trigger pullers, and non-combat posts will be contracted out. The swap will allow the U.S. to keep its troop level unchanged. So the amount of bodies isn't really changing according to this. They're just taking out support troops and putting in trigger pullers. Ex-CIA and fierce critic of both puppets, Ray McGovern, has a good write-up on informationclearinghouse.info, Afghanistan for Dummies. Pentagon terminates controversial contract with Rendon Group. This we went over last week, and that is the military, but it's now canceling their controversial reporter rating contract, and I'm sure they're canceling it for public approval, but the name will probably change and they'll continue to do the same thing. Those coming from Danger Room and Think Progress. Vetting reporters to see if their work has been favorable to the military in the past and whether or not they will get to be embedded with the military in the future. It's the same way it works if you're trying to make movies. Have you made movies that are anti-war? Or do you make movies like Michael Bay? CIA secret prisons organized from Germany. That's from Global Research. CIA doctors face human experimentation claims. That's from The Guardian. And we have a couple notes on our other PMC friends. Boeing's new death beam zaps vehicle. A frightening story by way of Huffington Post with a hat tip to Cryptagon. Trucks carrying nuclear weapons around the country revealed in photos. Science Applications International, a big partner with Homeland Security and FEMA, helping to run top-off drills and the like. SAIC has announced their financial results for the second quarter of fiscal year 2010, and they're making billions off of you. Our last note is scary, but shouldn't be the least bit surprising at all. I suppose it's only surprising that the word is out. Lewd and deviant behavior by guards at the U.S. Embassy in Kabul.
The American Embassy in Kabul, Afghanistan. In August, the target of rocket attacks and suicide bombings. Now, allegations that the contractor hired by the State Department to protect that embassy for years has created conditions that threaten its security. The report by the Independent Project on Government Oversight, or POGO, cites complaints from nearly 10% of the guards working for the Armor Group North America, now owned by Wacken Hut Services, Inc. The most explosive charges of what POGO calls deviant hazing and humiliation. POGO says it obtained these photos showing superiors and other guards off-duty hazing some new recruits, including images of half-naked men in compromising sexual positions with what appears to be alcohol, all highly offensive in a Muslim country. Guards who objected, they say, were ridiculed, demoted, and even fired. CNN communicated with one guard who confirmed the authenticity of the photos.
The impact for the job, though, is a total breakdown in the chain of command, a total lack of respect on the part of the guard force for their supervisors because of this kind of behavior.
POGO also says other problems undermine morale, including hiring an insufficient number of guards. The ones on duty were sleep-deprived, lacked proper training, and adequate armored vehicles. There was constant personnel turnover. Nearly two-thirds of the guards, they say, couldn't adequately speak English. End of charges, Afghan nationals working for the embassy were mistreated. It's just the latest in a long history of complaints against the company that started under the Bush administration.
The Secretary and the Department have made it clear that we will have zero tolerance of the type of conduct that is alleged in these documents.
For the past 2 years, the State Department repeatedly criticized the company for its poor performance. In this letter from June 2007, it warned the security of the U.S. Embassy in Kabul is in jeopardy. Yet in July, the Obama administration renewed the contract for another year with the option to extend until 2012.
They said, you know, we are now convinced everything's fine, and then they reissued the contract for another year. So I think the State Department is an equal partner in the problem here.
A Senate subcommittee criticized the State Department for publicly defending the company, calling the department's handling of the contractor a case study of how mismanagement and lack of oversight can result in poor performance. At times, the security of the U.S. Embassy in Kabul may have been placed at risk.
The head of that subcommittee, Senator Claire McCaskill, says the State Department's testimony appears to be misleading at best, and she is demanding all relevant documents. The State Department, meanwhile, says its inspector general has launched an investigation. CNN has contacted that contractor, Wacken Hut Services, Inc., but so far they have not responded to those allegations. Jill Doherty, CNN, the State Department.
Maybe that's because they changed their name to the Geo Group. So the names can change from Wacken Hut to Geo Group, from Blackwater to Z, from Bush to Obama, but the same agenda continues. Are you noticing a theme? Re-upping the contracts? And it's the same kind of behavior that, in a way, we saw the bit that we have seen at Abu Ghraib prison with the abuse. And in a way, maybe Rush Limbaugh did hit it right when saying that this was just like some frat guys blowing off steam. And in a way, if I can make a broad generalization, a lot of this activity does come from the jockass dicks you knew in high school. They're now working for Blackwater. or your local police department, because shucky darns, that pro NFL gig just didn't work out. Okay. More great work from Russia Today and Wayne Madsen in an amazing interview where, among many, many other things, we note that CIA and Blackwater infiltrated Ron Paul campaign.
Hi there. Well, this story really has all the goods. The CIA, Blackwater, journalists. It all sounds kind of like a movie script, but according to RT contributor and investigative journalist Wayne Madsen, it's real. Apparently, two people working as subcontractors for the CIA have links to Blackwater's operations in Iraq, Iran, Afghanistan, and Pakistan. So, who are these people? What kind of links are we really talking about here, and how could they get away with this? Well, joining me to answer those questions, Wayne Madsen. Thank you so much for being here. So help me put this puzzle together. The Central Intelligence Agency, Blackwater, these so-called journalists, what is going on here?
Well, while a lot of focus right now is on Blackwater, which received a prime contract to engage in a lot of covert operations around the world, including, now we're told, targeted assassinations and including the use of foreign mercenaries. Now we know that some of the subcontractors in this operation, two in particular, using phony press credentials from United Press International, which is owned by the cult leader Sung Myung Moon from South Korea,
so
were engaged in this
that,
activity.
That whoever issued these press credentials, were they involved in this then?
Well, they had to be. I mean, this is the worst case scenario when we talk about embedded journalists. These were not journalists, but actually in one case, one of these individuals received a journalist visa from Iran to visit Iran as a journalist, was actually involved in target analysis and target spotting in 2003 for a potential U.S. attack on that country.
I mean, some people might read this, might hear this report and say, okay, what's the big deal? But here's the thing. The CIA makes it a point, has always made it a point, to say that we do not use journalists as agents. This is not the first time, probably not the last time, that the CIA is going to come under fire. How are they going to respond to this?
Well, they're going to deny. They'll use their pat answer. We can neither confirm nor deny any of these operations. But it has been their policy, although we know in the past some journalists have been used for intelligence operations. But overall, it puts journalists in a very bad position of being looked at as potential agents. That puts every journalist operating in any part of the world in jeopardy of being called a U.S. Spy.
Now, you also wrote that you learned that a Blackwater security operative actually infiltrated the presidential campaigns of Mike Gravel and Ron Paul. Talk about that a little bit, because I think that that's something completely new that a lot of people haven't heard about.
One Blackwater employee who was armed with loaded weapons, had infiltrated the campaigns as a security person, was present at the presidential debates featuring two protected candidates by the Secret Service, Hillary Clinton and Barack Obama, but also the Republican presidential debates where John McCain, Mitt Romney were there. So when confronted with this, the Secret Service said, look, security personnel hired by private campaigns are their business. They didn't seem to be at all concerned about this individual, who was also flying on commercial flights with loaded weapons with permission.
So you're saying that the Secret Service also kind of was involved in this, or was given the go-ahead to say this is okay?
Obviously, there was a wink and a nod to have this particular individual who had a pass with Blackwater to be present at these presidential debates, where there were a host of people, including current President Obama, was present with his Secret Service protection.
All this stuff coming out about Blackwater, now known as Z, what is the future of this company? I mean, how many more stories do we have to read to say, okay, look, maybe this isn't such a good idea?
Well, the United States in the past used to condemn the use of mercenaries. When the Portuguese, the French, and others used them, it was bad. And now we have adopted the use of these mercenaries as policy. I think this has to be revisited. I don't think that we need to have mercenary companies operating in this country or on behalf of the United States government abroad. And Congress may want to look into these issues a lot more deeply.
How many more stories do we have to hear about them? Let's move quickly now through Police State International plans, provocateurs, and the peacemaker. First, we'd just like to remind you that FEMA says, remember, September is National Preparedness Month. Just don't tell New Orleans that. Ghost Troop warns of Vigilant Guard peril. Vigilant Guard being one of the drills we're soaking in currently. Military drills designed to indoctrinate you to seeing the military practice to take over your city. Ghost Troop, of course, comprising folks like Captain Eric May and William Fox, recently interviewed by Media Monarchy, and we went all the way through Vigilant Guard. That interview is, of course, up and available for you. Thousands of views on my YouTube channel of that interview. We also note, frighteningly, from FEMA, one of their press releases, I got the cash up for you from FEMA.gov, Thunderbolt exercises for FEMA. No notice events loom. This coming from the current head of FEMA, talking about Thunderbolt exercises, no notice events. Is that no notice to us or to the compartmentalized people who will be involved in these drills? Vigilant Guard Quake Drill set for Tonawanda, New York. That's from BuffaloNews.com. More on Vigilant Guard out of Montana from PublicIntelligence.net. Fort Lee, Virginia, training to protect soldiers and families. That's from WTVR.com. We've got the latest interoperability brief from NORTHCOM, showing you how the compartmentalization works. Nice big charts and graphs for you. Again, from publicintelligence.net. SAIC awarded contract to support DHS and FEMA. That's a press release from SAIC. And now we've got more PSAs. Napolitano is the current head of Homeland Stupidity, and Fugate, F-U-G-A-T-E, is the current head of FEMA, and they have unveiled new propaganda PSAs.
Most days go by without a whole lot of surprises. But what if a disaster strikes without warning? What if life, as you know it, has completely turned on its head? Would you be prepared? Before a disaster turns your family's world upside down, be ready. Get a kit. Make a plan. Be informed. Learn how at www.ready.gov. Brought to you by the Federal Emergency Management Agency and the Ad Council.
Well, thank you. And, you know, actually, they're right. You should actually be prepared. They've pretty much told us everything they're prepping for. An interesting story by way of PeninsulaDailyNews.com. Let's see, wait, I'll hit the link. What's their headline for this story? Without a trace, armed bank robber escapes intense law enforcement search, remains at large. This out of Washington State. But the more appropriate headline is mine. Crime after crime, Homeland Security used to investigate bank robbery. That's right, helicopters from Homeland Security used to try and track this guy who's gone without a trace. Homeland Security, the thing they said would only be used for terrorists. It can't happen here. And that's just what this elderly couple said right before they were forced into state custody.
Gene and Michael Kidd never imagined their retirement would play out like this.
I feel like I'm not in America. I can't believe it. I've been hijacked off the street virtually and imprisoned.
The kids lived here in this Richardson home for decades, but for months now, it's been this tiny room. They've lost control over everything, their money, their home, even their car. They've been robbed of their dignity, even their voice. And who's responsible? The state of Texas.
We're still kind of in a state of shock.
Kidd worked as an engineer at KDFW for 23 years. He retired in 2001 with a pension, retirement account, and Social Security. Last month, he called the station for help.
The kids have no children and no relatives nearby. In November, Michael fell and broke his hip here at the house and was rushed to the hospital and into surgery. Gene waited by his side. But after several days, the hospital called Adult Protective Services, reporting that Gene had been in the waiting room and wasn't eating.
What happened next is a complicated legal tale filed with the Collin County Probate Court. Caseworkers paint a picture of two incompetent old people, aged 67 and 70, suffering from dementia, who've mismanaged their finances and used poor judgment. It says Michael is verbally abused and even attempted to assault Gene.
Coca-Cola will be fine.
Michael says Gene has memory trouble but denies everything else.
That's okay.
A judge determined the kids were incapacitated, so the state sent them to the Countryside Nursing Home in Pilot Point and is now burning through their money to pay for their care. How much money's left?
I know what my income was, and it was more than enough to take care of my bills. So what's all this giving these people money to keep me in a place where I'm deteriorating, you know, instead of getting better?
Racing down the police state plans, preparing for a riot. Texas agencies receive crowd control training. That's from rrleader.com out of Round Rock, Texas. SPLC, the Southern Poverty Law Center, has an article called The Second Wave. I'm calling it the second wave of SPLC's fear-mongering about homegrown errorism as the class war, race war ratchets up. A primer on martial law from newswithviews.com. Photos of possible provocateurs at an In the Fed rally over on InfoWars. And again from InfoWars by way of We Are Change. Security goon crushes free speech saying, "This ain't America no more."
So this is Officer Wesley Cheek Jr.
Yes, sir.
And he's saying that my thing here is, what are you saying it is?
I'm saying it can't be up on billboard property.
Why not?
Because I just told you it couldn't be.
Why can it not be?
Sir, it can't be up.
Why can it not be?
It just can't be up.
Did you take a note to follow the Constitution?
Yes, I did.
You did?
Yes.
Where is it in the Constitution?
Man, on my job.
It's freedom.
My job said it can't be here, so I'm doing my job.
Where does it say that in your job?
Actually, school grounds have very different First Amendment rights than anywhere else.
They were churches.
What's the difference between that and something here?
It's
something there. And those over there. And those over there.
But you got this with a picture. That's the difference. This got a picture on it.
What does it mean?
That don't have a picture on it.
It doesn't have anybody.
So what?
Sir, leave the picture down. If you don't, if you put the picture back up, we'll be charged with trespass and you will have to go. Okay?
Well, wait a second. I'm charged with trespassing?
I said you will be.
That's not trespassing, Avenue.
If I told you once to take it down and you put it back up, then
yeah,
I can charge you whatever I want to charge you with. Okay? So I'm telling you.
So you make the law too?
Put it down.
This is America. This used to be America.
It ain't no more, okay?
Yeah. I know it ain't. That's the part point of the picture.
The U.S.
fascism.
The U.S. Supreme Court.
Wesley Cheeks. Wesley Cheeks
as
fascist.
The last note on police state international plans. Batten down the hatches. Newport Beach gets peacemaker armored personnel carrier. This from dailypilot.com. It's funny, they got it from another city because they got newer shit. So again, don't worry when you see armed military personnel carriers rolling down the street. It's for your freedom. Moving quickly, keeping the media coming. 42% say that they would replace Congress with random people from the phone book. 42% is also the same number from that Zogby poll we mentioned of Obama's disapproval rating. 42-42, up and down. The other related thing, again, coming from Rasmussen Reports, 57% would like to replace entire Congress. So again, as we watch the phony left and right, let's take a look at Dana Perino and Fox News.
Well, we're back with former White House Press Secretary Dana Perino. We're going to look at an interesting poll, Dana, and I was interested in your opinion on this first fact. How would you rate the way Congress is doing its job? 56% of Americans surveyed say poor. You actually think the number would have been higher, or you were surprised it wasn't higher.
Yeah, I'm sure it certainly was. Usually what happens is you have people who believe that their congressman
right.
is great,
mm-hmm.
but that everybody else is a bunch of knuckleheads that don't know what they're doing.
Yeah.
But 57% is still a pretty high number. It probably gives a little bit of concern to the leaders, the Democrats, and probably a little bit of encouragement to Republicans, but there's
right.
a few things they have to do to capitalize on that.
And you mentioned 57%. 57% of Americans, that's the figure, think that we should replace everybody in Congress. We've got another graphic. That's what kind of a job they're doing, job performance. 57.
It's actually right over there. Would you shoot it with the
camera? And they move that one. 57% of us say, let's just start over. Can we?
Right, and I think that's actually pretty low. There is benefit to having some experience in Congress. It takes a while to get your footing when you're a freshman member. It takes a while to crawl up the ranks of the committee chairmanships, which are very powerful, and certainly people who have senators that are in powerful committee positions probably don't want their senator to be replaced. But if they don't focus on good constituent service and in listening to their constituents, especially right. when it comes to this health care debate, then they might have some trouble next fall.
And two things on that. One, let's go inside the numbers, if I could borrow a line from Terry Bradshaw. And in that, it's 70% of the 57% that you saw, they are unaffiliated party people. So if they're not a Democrat or Republican, 70% want them replaced, and 59% think they're overpaid. Now, you mentioned health care. Senator Grassley essentially says, if I don't have, feel as though there's 75 senators that agree with any compromise bill, I am not voting for it. So there's not going to be a push by any wildcatters on the Republican side to get something done unless there's some major give.
One of the things I thought interesting on that point is that yesterday you saw the New York Times providing air cover to Democrats, saying that while it's not preferable and we wish we didn't have to do it, we guess that the only thing we're going to be able to do now is ram through a democratically supported bill. Mm-hmm. And it doesn't matter if there's any Republican support. So they're providing them the, you know, the left air cover that they need to do it. But I think it would be a huge mistake. This is not a way to unite the country. They have to face facts. They can't answer the questions on the merits of their proposal. Instead, they just attack anyone who suggests gotcha. That they should ask, am I really going to be able to keep my doctor?
Every Monday morning, she drops by, even during the last day of August. Dana Perino, thank you very much.
Happily.
Have a great rest of the summer.
Sorry to subject you to that whole clip from the goobers at Fox News, but I think it's worth it to hear Dana Perino talk about left cover for Obama. We'll have to let Tarpley know about that. Moving on to history mystery, release, deport, link, and deny. First, amazingly enough, former Congressman James Traficant has been released from prison. This from the Deutsche Press Agency. Former U.S. Congressman James Traficant was freed from prison on Wednesday after serving more than 7 years behind bars on corruption charges. Traficant, 68, departed the Federal Medical Center in Rochester, Minnesota, but still must serve 3 years of probation, said Felicia Ponce, spokeswoman for the Bureau of Prisons in Washington. The Democrat represented the state of Ohio from 1985 until July 2002, when he was expelled from Congress 1 week before the sentencing. He had been convicted months earlier for racketeering, bribery, and tax evasion. The flamboyant Democrat was known for his unique mop of hair and rants on the floor of the House of Representatives on subjects ranging from income tax to wonder brawls.
My God, what have we come to? In closing, I make one-minute speeches. When federal judges remove God from the Pledge of Allegiance, federal judges welcome Satan. We have an aristocratic judiciary who's only concerned about being investigated by the FBI and the IRS. They cater to them. They're scared to death of them, and you better put that in order. I broke no laws. You expel me. I will go down in history as an expelled member, but you know what? I have a very clear conscience. I'm proud to be an American. I hate him. I hate the government and love America. And part of the government I hate is what I told you earlier, that executive branch that scares the American people. And let me close by saying no American should be afraid of a government. It is our government, and you should help take it back. I think the Republicans can do that. I think the Democrats want to do that. And I think they're going to take back the House. And somebody better sure as hell do that. Because the American people are beginning to distrust, not just fear. And from fear and distrust comes hate. And God Almighty, where are we going to end up? Very few people vote in America as it is.
That's just one clip of many amazing clips from James Traficant from July 2002 as he was going down in flames. Traficant loves America, hates the government. Connecticut state legislatures in the now infamous solitaire photo have been identified. This is from the Hartford Courant. There was a photo taken of state senators playing solitaire while they should have been listening to legislation they were going to vote on. They've now been identified and shamed. U.S. seeks the Michigan deportation of accused Nazi helper John Kalimon, K-A-L-Y-M-O-N. History Mystery Notes. Always the best coming from Alex Constantine. Operation Zapata, United Fruit, CIA, Poppy Bush, Rockefeller, Dulles, etc. We also have Oklahoma City bombing witness linked to the CIA. This from InfoWars. Princess Di's death, not an accident, says leading lawyer Michael Mansfield, who represented Mohammed Fayed in the inquest. That's from the Telegraph. Manson follower Susan Atkins denied parole again. If we hit the flashback link to last July, 2008 on MediaMonarchy.com, the Manson family, Martinsburg and Susan Atkins, we note that they were filming a docudrama, some of it in Martinsburg, West Virginia, and along with that, last July, Susan Atkins was denied parole. The last note on History Mystery goes to the Yahoo BuzzLog, and I'm just going to say the two words. Chupacabra caught? But more seriously, on to the Econocrash. Blood money, insider trading, banksters, and biometrics. Amazingly, and this is the kind of stuff that really helps you see what's going down. Blood oath sealed Stanford deal. This comes from the New York Times. R. Allen Stanford's relationship with the chief regulator of his Antigua bank was closer than most. At a meeting in 2003, they became blood brothers, cutting their wrists and mixing their blood in a brotherhood ceremony that Mr. Stanford's chief financial officer said promoted an elaborate scheme to hide a multi-billion dollar fraud from American and other regulators. The assertion that the two took a blood oath was laid out in a plea agreement signed by the officer James N. Davis and filed Thursday. Blood money indeed. As a sidebar to that, to The Guardian, Kroll and Associates gave the all clear to the alleged Ponzi pair. Kroll, that's K-R-O-L-L. More on them in a little bit. Kroll, the secretive investigations consultancy, is facing embarrassment after giving a clean bill of health to two alleged fraudsters who are accused of running a $248 million Ponzi scheme. The revelation is a blow for Kroll, as the American firm still reeling from the discovery that one of its top investigators gave a similar endorsement to Sir Alan Stanford. Borrowing to pay interest on borrowing is a Ponzi scheme. That's from Rubini, by way of Washington's blog. Insiders selling stocks at highest level since May 2008. The SEC is investigating Apple computers for insider trading. That's from the Huffington Post. From Reuters, the Fed urges secrecy on bailed out banks, and we'll note the flashback video just going back a few weeks ago where Kucinich notes that the Fed is paying banks not to make loans. Bloomberg won a lawsuit against the Federal Reserve, trying to find out who's getting all the bailout billions, so good on Bloomberg. And of course, what would a Friday Media Monarchy be without mentioning FDIC Friday? Regulators shutter three banks last Friday in California, Maryland, and Minnesota, bringing the 2009 total to 84 so far this year. Was Morgan Stanley compromised by Project Mayhem? This ties in with the TJX hacker and massive credit card scheme. But who did he work for? Oh, it was Morgan Stanley. An amazing bit of street theater and protest. One of the guys from one of the amazing We Are Change organizations dressed up a little like the Monopoly Man, a little bit like J.P. Morgan, a little bit like a globalist banker, and he went out to blow the whistle on the New World Order.
Because they're both owned by the Federal Reserve. Why were all of them for the bailouts? The people didn't want the bailouts. Is anybody here for the bailouts?
No!
Did it happen?
Yeah.
Did I get my money? Do I impose tyranny on all of you? While the Republicans, they deceive you. They wrap themselves in Gadsden flags. They support half of the Constitution. Article 1, Section 8 of the U.S. Constitution states that the money supply of the United States shall be controlled by Congress, not by private for-profit multinational bank cartels like I own. You're being duped. Both parties are in bed with the Federal Reserve. You watch the media and all the talking heads never talk about the Federal Reserve. I'm glad none of the talking heads ever exposed this truth. I'm glad that neither party ever talks about this.
Hey, if you would like to audit the Federal Reserve, they have petitions being signed right down the road, H.R. 1207, S604. Get on board. Contact your elected officials and demand, not request, but demand they audit the private Federal Reserve because the money is the American people's, not offshore banks.
A plank of the Communist Manifesto is for a private banking cartel to control a nation's monetary system. Thank you, American people. Thank you for giving it to me. Thank you for allowing to steal your money through the IRS system. And thank you for not demanding your politicians talk about this fraud. Thank you for not keep listening to talking heads that never talk about it. They divide you, while in the meantime, I pick your pockets. I pick it every day while you sleep. And the talking heads and the politicians, they don't talk about it except for Ron Paul.
Big props to the street theater there, dressing up like a globalist banker and telling people how it is. Representative Barney Frank says the House will pass Paul's Fed bill this year. Oh, wait, misinfo alert. If you actually watch the video, he really says the things we really want to do with Audit the Fed, H.R. 1207, will pretty much probably be redacted out. Misinfo alert by way of InfoWars. U.S. jobless soars as companies squeeze workers. Squeeze workers, that's from the Times Online out of the U.K. Another bit of news of the weird, and this one's also just kind of sad. A Florida man born without arms said a Tampa bank would not let him cash a check because he couldn't provide a thumbprint. More on the growing tent cities and squatting that we're going to see popping up in the dead malls of America. For more hard-pressed Americans, a campsite is home. That's from the Christian Science Monitor. We'll close out this O'Connor crash posting blood money, insider trading, banksters, and biometrics with, again, the note on the jobless rate at 9.7%, a 26-year high or low. 216,000 jobs lost in August. Let's jump across the pond, across a few ponds, to the latest episode from James Corbett and CorbettReport.com, episode 96, Lisbon Cometh. Conceived in iniquity and born in sin, the EU is the model dictatorship for the oligarchs and globalists who are seeking to centralize power in their large regional governments. The Irish David defeated the EU Goliath in their Lisbon Treaty referendum last year, but we all know the EU bureaucrats won't take no for an answer. This latest episode, 96, Lisbon Cometh, goes into and talks to professors and activists about how the free people of the world can stop the globalists in Europe. I believe October 2nd is going to be the next time the EU tries to cram the Lisbon Treaty down the Irish throats. There is a related video, No to Lisbon, and even another unrelated video from James Corbett. He's back from vacation and raring to go, cranking out episodes, cranking out videos. Economics 101, where he talks to Bob Chapman on the difference between sound money and fiat money. The other thing I'll note about Corbett Report is that the show has now been picked up by ZeroPointRadio.com. So you got Media Monarchy, Ground Zero Lounge, Corbett Report, all mixing together thanks to ZeroPointRadio.com. On to geopolitics, landslides, Lockerbie, body snatchers, and bombs. Japanese election upends long ruling party. A ton of stories from the Associated Press, the Washington Post, Wikinews on Yukio Hatoyama named prime minister. It's the quote-unquote opposition party. Al Megrahi, the released Lockerbie convict, has been hospitalized amid questions over prognosis. That goes to Alex Constantine. Not too many other people talking about that. We had the big ballyhoo when he got let out. Now, almost, oh, he's in the hospital. So we should keep an eye on that. The Rothschilds said to start fund. That's from Bloomberg. But more interestingly, as Lisbon looms, Rothschilds Bank has replaced Merrill on advising Ireland about their banking situation. So as Ireland is about to be absorbed into the EU, Rothschilds move in to basically shepherd the bankruptcy along. Pinochet purges arrests ordered. That goes back to, of course, Chile. And of course, on September 11th, 1973, a CIA coup helped overthrow Allende and put in Pinochet. Former Israeli Prime Minister Ehud Olmert indicted. That's from the Washington Post. And again, the story of Israeli body snatchers. Palestinian organ story has government in frenzied denial mode. That's from counterpunch.org. El Baradei calls the Iranian threat hyped. That's from the Jerusalem Post. Assassin hid explosives in body in a failed attack on the Saudi prince. That's from themedialine.org. Bombs explode in Athens and Thessalonica. That's from The Guardian, but from Financial Times. Athens stock exchange hit by left-wing car bomb. That's a little more specific. Anti-terror exercises held in Pakistan. Gunmen kill Mexico police deputy. And gunmen kill at least 18 people at a drug rehab massacre in Mexico.
It's an atrocity that's shocking, even in Mexico's relentless drug war. Gunmen broke into this drug rehabilitation center Wednesday, lined 17 people up against a wall, and opened fire on them, killing all of them. This woman says she rushed over after hearing of the shooting on the news. She doesn't know if her relatives inside were among the 17. It's not clear why those 17 were picked out or who did the shooting. This attack is just the latest in what has been a bloody, relentless drug war. Earlier Wednesday, a senior security official was killed in a brazen ambush as he was being driven home. Three others also died in that attack. And then there was this over the weekend. Eight people were killed when gunmen opened fire on a crowd of young people. Police say they believe all of this is connected to drugs, though they have no suspects in any of the cases. Federal agents have increased their presence on the streets, but they have done little to stop the violence. At least 1,400 people have been killed in this city alone this year. More than 13,000 have died countrywide since 2006. Diane Kepley, The Associated Press.
So the murder and mayhem and massacres in Mexico, all surrounding drugs and gangs, leads us right into murder and mayhem, mind control, sex slaves, and wildfires. And we start off by returning to the story we quickly covered last week, and that is the story of J.C. Lee Dugard. I knew the story was interesting and bizarre from the moment it broke, and as it all starts to spill out, and as, again, start to get a little bit of the background and context from folks like Alex Constantine, who know a thing or two about ritualized sex abuse, kidnapping, cult crimes. Let's just get the quick little report. Couple who kidnapped girl 18 years ago deny all charges.
It was a fearful loss that has haunted this community for nearly two decades.
It's crazy. I remember my sister was in her class in fifth grade when it happened. We lived down here. And I was blown away.
The abduction of 11-year-old J.C. Dugard changed lives here in this South Lake Tahoe neighborhood forever.
That day, my sister didn't go to the bus stop. And I was just scared. Ever since, to go to the bus stop, my parents never let her go back here.
Friends and neighbors grieved and still held out hope as months stretched into years.
And I remember growing up in this neighborhood, pink ribbons were hung everywhere.
Yeah, we got a discount on the place because of what happened.
When he retired, David Watkins bought the home JC had lived in 1998.
You hear about it every year. You know, someone says something about it, you know, wondering what happened with her and what's going on with her.
And they have lived with the questions, the rumors that have swirled ever since.
I heard she was buried around here and I heard she wasn't. You know, my neighbor up the street said he saw her get snagged, so.
Now, just the possibility of answers in this old case after so many years seems hard to believe.
Maybe put an end to everything finally.
Because it was one of those mysteries. We'd always obviously thought the worst, not wanting to, but...
Couple who kidnapped girl 18 years back deny all charges. That, as well as sex kidnapper's wife, was victim too. Those both come from the Deutsche Press Agency. But returning to Alex Constantine, J.C. Lee Dugard and Philip Garrido's daughters, quote, like brainwashed zombies. Constantine, by way of the Examiner, also goes into the case of Sharon Marshall, a related case of kidnapping and ritualized sex abuse. And it seemed to multiply. From the Independent, days later, UK police rescue sex slave children. Five children being kept as sex slaves by pedophiles who broadcast daily abuse of their victims over the internet have been rescued by police from homes in Scotland and England and placed in care. Boys and girls aged 7 to 13 were freed in a series of raids last month as part of an investigation by a specialist Scottish unit set up to oversee inquiries into serious sexual crimes. The connections will be interesting. Seven found slain in a Georgia home. ACLU counsel and gay rights champion Larry Frankel found dead in a Washington, D.C. park. California wildfires doubles in size, threatens 12,000 plus homes, and now I believe they're looking at arson. Manchester teenagers planned Columbine-style attacks. That's out of the UK by way of The Guardian. Indonesian earthquake leaves 57 dead, dozens missing. That's from the Associated Press. And lastly, most recently this morning from CNN, documentary filmmaker shot dead in El Salvador. He was making a documentary about murderous Latin gangs, and that's what happens. A little more about Katrina as we've now gone past the fourth anniversary that no one seemed to talk about last week. This from Raw Story, doctor admits euthanizing patients during Katrina. A doctor who was working the rounds at New Orleans Memorial Medical Center during Katrina has admitted euthanizing patients during a crucial supply of energy and supplies at the hospital. Despite the revelations, the state prosecution service in Louisiana says it will not reopen an investigation into the matter, the Associated Press reports. Links to the AP, as well as more on Dr. Ewing Cook and the massive investigation from ProPublica.org. And we return to Virginia for the copycat effect. Virginia Tech students slain again.
It's shocking. It's disturbing.
A passerby found the bodies of 19-year-old David Lee Metzler and 18-year-old Heidi Lynn Child here at a campground in Jefferson National Forest, about 15 miles from Virginia Tech's campus. Authorities say it's a popular hangout for students.
They just come here to park, and we're sitting there probably talking.
Both appear to have been shot. Authorities say Metzler's body was found inside a car and Child's was found outside the car.
To summarize it in one word, it's brutal. Quite honestly, it's brutal.
Police don't have a suspect. Metzler and Child's were both sophomores. These latest killings hit campus still reeling from the worst mass shooting in modern U.S. history. 2 years ago, a student gunman killed 32 others and himself. Myra Lopez, The Associated Press.
The copycat effect. Unfortunately, I'm going to switch gears wildly here on you as we go from heartbreaking stories like that to back to the media and its monarchy. From the Associated Press, my headline, Mouse Meet Spider. Disney to buy Marvel Entertainment for $4 billion. The Walt Disney Corporation Company is buying Marvel Entertainment Inc. for $4 billion in cash and stock, bringing such characters as Iron Man and Spider-Man into the family of Mickey Mouse and Wally. Under the deal, which was announced last Monday and is expected to close by the end of the year, Disney will acquire the rights to 5,000 Marvel Comics characters. Many of them, including the Fantastic Four and the X-Men, were co-created by the comic book legend Stan Lee. Disney CEO Robert Iger, I-G-E-R, said Marvel's comic books, TV shows, movies, and video games amounted to a treasure trove of content. Sounds like he loves it. Iger said the deal would bring benefits like the ones Disney got from buying Toy Story creator Pixar for $7.4 billion in stock in 2006. It's kind of strange to think that Pixar is worth more money than Marvel, which has been around for decades, but the acquisition of Marvel offers us a similar opportunity to advance our strategy to build a business that is stronger than the sum of its parts. He just sounds like he's just brimming with love for comics and cartoons and stuff. He's just a kid at heart thinking about the opportunity to advance our strategy for content distribution. Mouse meets Spider. You know, and I was a comic book guy growing up in middle school. I started when all the comics had glow-in-the-dark covers, and you kept them in plastic bags, and you never looked at them, and it was X-Force and all that stuff, and Image, and all those guys went over and started those comics, and it did have Spawn and all that stuff, and it was, in a sense, the indies of comics, but of course, they screwed it all up because they could never put books out on time. Marvel went bankrupt at some point, and I'm just pulling this off the top of my head. They went bankrupt and were essentially bought up by a venture capital firm, basically a business whose business it is to own businesses with a nice diversified portfolio. And it was at that point that you could see that the bean counters came in and said, well, we're going to turn this around and make this a profitable venture. That's when you started to see all the shitty movies start to come out. Spider-Man, X-Men, Wolverine, Hulk, blah, Elektra, Daredevil, crap, garbage, bullshit. Turn the channel. Let's turn the channel to NBC and see what's going on. Oh, look. Jenna Bush has been hired as a Today Show reporter. This from the Washington Post. NBC's Today Show has hired someone with White House experience as a new correspondent, former first daughter Jenna Hager, H-A-G-E-R. I don't think she married Sammy. The daughter of former President George W. Bush will contribute stories about once a month on issues like education to television's top-rated morning news show, said Jim Bell, its executive producer. Hager, Jenna Bush, a 27-year-old teacher in Baltimore, says she's always wanted to be a teacher and a writer and has already authored two books. But she was intrigued by the idea of getting into television when Bell contacted her. It wasn't something I'd always dreamed to do, but I think one of the most important things in life is to be open-minded and to be open-minded for change. I was not able to find any connections with Jim Bell. Not sure if he connects back to Bell Helicopters or not, but we wouldn't be surprised because he's connected to General Electric. So I can't wait to see Jenna Bush on the Today Show, and I'm sure she'll do lots of fluffy human interest stories, probably having to do with vaccines or God knows what. But we're pretty much out of time for this episode 139 of MediaMonarchy.com. And I saved the last couple postings for last. Perhaps knowing I may not get through everything. So saving these two pieces for last and not hitting them I suppose is all right, because if there's anything to save for next week, it would be all the latest 9/11 updates. So, I'll just whet your appetite a little bit. We have an amazing archive of suppressed news videos that are out thanks to Jonathan Elenoff, activist, researcher, and the filmmaker behind the Core of Corruption documentary series, coreofcorruption.com. So far, it's 142 videos up on YouTube. They're all in a playlist. If you hit start, it'll just keep rolling through all the videos. And they relate to everything from the Trilateral Commission, the shadow government that went into operation on 9/11, at least they let us know it went into operation on 9/11, the Bohemian Grove, insider trading, CIA Contra drug running, all the topics that the nightly news almost never mentions. But in these cases, it is from the mainstream news. CBS, ABC, Peter Jennings, Tom Brokaw, all of it. It's amazing. So since we didn't have time to go into this week, and we were going to play a clip from CBS News talking about Iran-Contra drug running involving the Bushes, Clinton being governor in MENA, Arkansas, and involving Barry Seal and Terry Reid. So we don't have time to go into that, but again, we will go further into all these amazing videos. We won't go into all of them. We will go over all of these amazing videos. And again, thanks to my man James Corbett for bringing this to my attention. He wrote up an article about this archive. Again, coreofcorruption.com. And again, the other bit to whet your appetite, 9/11 updates, no New York, 93 Memorial, and mystery aircraft. Those will have to wait until the next episode of Media Monarchy, where I will tell you, next week we should have at least two new episodes. Of course, next Friday is September 11th, 2009, the 8th anniversary of the day that changed everything. Working on getting together a nice, well-paced, well-produced, well-thought-out 9/11 episode for you, as it's also generally the anniversary for MediaMonarchy.com. It'll be the four-year anniversary. And the biggest news, I'm so excited to tell you. Coming up this week, I'm going to be conducting an interview with Richard Andrew Grove, originally from 9/11 Synchronicity. He is now behind TragedyAndHope.com. I can't even say how excited I am to talk to Richard Andrew Grove. One of my big inspirations in doing the radio show Media Monarchy. So please, stay tuned. It's going to be great. If you dig the show, please help spread the word. This is how all of this works. And without further ado, it's creepy customer time, my friends. I track the visitors to MediaMonarchy.com, and sometimes they're quite interesting. In the last week, we had the United States Marine Corps out of Quantico, the Navy Network Information Center out of Alexandria, the London Health Sciences Center out of London, Ontario, in Canada, Fort Meade, of course, the home of the NSA, the Virginia State Police. They were reading about Heidi Childs and David Metzler, the two most recent students killed at Virginia Tech. Again, Navy Network, this time out of Pensacola, the South Dakota State Government, the Federal Aviation Administration, the Department of Veteran Affairs, the DOD, the Seattle Times, private military contractors Booz Allen and Hamilton. They were reading about Ardent Century 09, NORAD NORTHCOM terror drills that we went over back at the end of June. The United States Department of Transportation, they Googled Ardent Century. And we also had J.P. Morgan Chase, the National Archives and Records Administration, NARA. They Googled Kennedy Motorcade Route, Chicago. And finally, being investigated by the SEC for insider trading, Apple Computer out of Sacramento, California. We're reading about the Manson family, Martinsburg, West Virginia, and Susan Atkins. And And it's there that I'm going to have to leave you, my friends. Once again, a huge thanks to all you guys who go to the site, who download the show, who share it, who post the stories, repost the stories, talk about it, bring up discussions, share the info. Please. And I cordially invite you to join me for the amazing episodes coming next week from MediaMonarchy.com. Until then, my name's James Evan Pilato. I'm your host and webmaster of the site and show, reminding you to get active or get radioactive. Take care.
Police would get him just the same.